sky is so starless. Baby, the sky is so starless. Baby, you got me growing heartless. So heartless, girl, it's starless. Starless, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's up, man? Red Light Special, episode 6. Kristen, we back. 6 episodes, man. I think they like us.
6 episodes in. Still feel like it's brand new, but I feel like we're getting into a groove.
It definitely hitting the groove, and they ain't pulled the plug yet. Shout out to Combat Jack and Chris and Loudspeakers, man. A lot of good feedback from y'all. What y'all just heard was our intro theme song, Starless, from Jake and Papa. They're coming up to the show soon. They're from L.A. I think they're going to be here in September, so they're going to come up and chop it up with us. But they was gracious enough to give us our intro theme music for the Red Light Special. And we're here. Chris, how you doing? How was your weekend?
Weekend was good. I kept it a little bit low-key this weekend. I mean, I usually do for holidays, but you know, watch some fireworks, kind of enjoyed with the family. I actually spent July 4th working.
Okay, what did you do on July 4th?
I shot one of the scenes to a, I don't want to say short film, but I want to say a visual that we're doing. I'm actually working with Carl on a visual to one of Rico Love's songs, Run For Me, which is probably one of my favorites from the album. And yeah, I spent like 11 hours on July 4th just shooting in the city, so...
That's right.
Should be out in a few weeks.
The life of Kristen Carl, actress, model, R&B aficionado.
What'd you do on July 4th?
Just chill with the fam. Watch the fireworks. Cool, just low key. I'm a homebody when I don't have to work or be out or whatever. Like, I like being just with the fam, and it was a nice time. And Lou, who was up here last week, you know, he's going overseas to Kuwait, so that's my best friend. So we spent time together. I'm not going to see him for a year. He's going to go out there and play G.I. Joe. But, you know, he'll be back. But you mentioned fireworks. We saw the fireworks over the weekend.
Yep.
Did you see the fireworks today?
What you talking about?
You know, it was a couple of days ago, actually. You know, they keep going, but Miguel...
I saw Miguel. It for the first time this morning, actually.
Nah. It started a couple of days ago, trust me.
Okay.
Your boy Miguel let off some fireworks. You want to talk about what's going on?
Listen, Miguel, before I even say anything about my opinion personally on what I think about it, the internet has been in a frenzy about Miguel because he said, quote unquote, to be completely honest, and no disrespect to anyone, I genuinely believe that I make better music all the way around. And now...
Better music than who?
This is Miguel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Frank Ocean.
All right, talking about Frank. So the question is, does Miguel make better music than Frank Ocean? I mean, first of all, he's supposed to feel that way, right? Like, I mean... You know, this is the hip-hop generation. If you get in the studio and you start creating, I mean, you want to feel like you're the best out there. He didn't say Frank Ocean was trash.
Right. And I agree with you. I mean, I think if this was a rapper and a good rapper, you know, you have rappers who are, you know, in people's opinions, top 5 dead or alive, and they come out all the time and they say, oh, I'm the best. And if, you know, if anybody can be better than me, then go ahead and do it. But until then... I rock the crown, and it's everybody praises them for saying that, but then when an R&B artist comes out and says that, it's kind of like, well, what makes you so special, you know? And it's like, I think Miguel just has a bigger catalog, first of all, and I think he's amazing, but I think he's way different than Frank Ocean. I think they're two different singers, types of singers, and I don't really want to compare them, you know?
Right. Listen, man, you think Michael Jackson and Prince wasn't looking at each other?
Right.
Back in the 80s? Like,
exactly.
It's okay. It's cool. Don't be alarmed. Like, this is what goes down. But look, I'm going to say it like this. I'm going to put it, yeah, Miguel got it. You know why? Because I want a new Frank Ocean album. So maybe, you know, until I hear something new for Frank Ocean, Miguel got it. So
he said he's putting something out this summer.
Okay, let's get to it then. Like, let's put a little pressure. But, you know, Miguel, too, I don't know if you've seen, went on his Instagram and said, I'll read it. It says, I want to clear the air. Yes, I'm competitive. We all have a level of confidence and competitiveness to put ourselves on the line day in and day out. But I also believe there's room for all artists. That's what Wild Heart is all about, celebrating individuality. I guess what I'm saying is there's no need to compare apples to oranges. There's something out there for everyone. That's why I'm here and able to do what I do. So thank you to everyone who enjoys my music. and all love to anyone who doesn't. We're all here to find our own wave, and that's okay. Stay passionate, stay free, and of course, stay wild. So there you have it.
And I think that's the best way to put it. A couple of our followers on Twitter, at the Twitter page is at RLS Podcast. So I had put up a tweet just asking, you know, in general, you know, who's better? Does he make better music? And pretty much seems like everybody has the same opinion. I get yes and yes. You know, Miguel hasn't made a Pyramids or a Thinking About You. I feel like it's a matter of preference. Frank Ocean really doesn't have discography of Miguel. I think it depends on your mood, you know. Everybody kind of saying the same thing, you know,
reading,
it's just a matter of
you're
preference.
You're reading Twitter comments. This is
not
your okay.
This is all of our, you know, followers just kind of chiming in.
Yeah, you know, Miguel doesn't have a Thinking About You, but does Frank Ocean have a Darn?
Right.
I don't know. You know, it depends on your preference. But, you know, I think what's really great, man, and what we want to celebrate here at the Red Light Special is we have two, and we have more, but we have two R&B artists worth talking about on this level that are both making great music to the point now where we're comparing them. And that's a good thing because I think a lot of times R&B music gets marginalized, you know, to the point. So let's be passionate, let's be competitive, sure, but let's not also cancel each other out. I mean, these are two phenomenal artists.
Right.
You agree?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I want to get, this is going to lead us into our guest for today. Who may or may not have an opinion. We might put him on the spot, we might not. But this brother, man, we joke about it. Since the first episode, his name has been in the air. We joke, and it feels like every episode this guy's name gets brought up, all right? So he's a veteran producer from Queens, New York, and got his start as a kid playing keyboards on Curtis Blow's album. Like, who does that happen to, right? I mean, since then, he's grown. He's produced for the Fugees, produced for Nas, Amy Winehouse, Alicia Keys, Jasmine Sullivan, Fergie, Mac Wiles, just to name a few. His 2013 album, One in the Chamber, was Grammy nominated. And most recently, actually, he produced Face the Sun for Miguel for his Wild Heart album. That's his collaboration with Lenny Kravitz. He has his own label, Louder Than Life, and Remy Fah. I mean... This dude, man, is a great friend of mine, an inspiration, and just an artist and a tremendous musical mind that I just look up to, man. And I'm glad he's here. None other than Salaam Remy, man. Salaam, what's up, brother?
What up?
Did I get all? I had to truncate the discography, man. I couldn't actually fit all that you have done in your career.
Honestly, you know what's crazy? I was sitting with my engineer who's been working with me since like 1990 yesterday. And I played a couple things, and he's like, yo, I never heard this before. I didn't know you did that. So it's like, I mean, I'm blessed to be able to work for so long, but a lot of people that know me well have no idea what I do on a daily basis. Well, but I like it like that. I like the music to just speak for itself.
You're very quiet, and you're very humble as well. You know, a lot of times in this business, you have to be your own publicist, right?
Right.
I did this, I did that. I mean, you never see Salaam toot his own horn. And so I'm going to take that role from here on out, my brother. I don't require any payment. I'm going to be the Salaam Remy publicist PR machine, man, because all the work that you put in, man, I think just doesn't get acknowledged enough. And I don't want it to go under the radar, bro, because you've done some amazing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of different ways to look at it, but for me, I'm just happy to be here today. You know what I'm saying? I'm all about what I'm doing tomorrow. Right. I ain't really worrying about last year's work.
Right.
Or the year or 10 years ago's work or 15 years ago's work. You know, it's kind of different. I've been going through a bit of that recently, but we'll get into that later.
Okay. Well, one of your most recent joints, right, is, Chris, you want to talk about it? It's one of your favorite joints off of Wild Heart, right?
Oh, Face the Sun. First of all, I want to ask you, because I think, you know, in the last episode we were talking about Miguel's album, and I was kind of saying how he's taking a completely different route on this album, the sound to it, even, you know, a lot more guitars on it. How did you get the collaboration with Lenny Kravitz on that song?
Miguel actually did that. I mean, first of all, the first thing I'll say is that when I met Miguel in 2009, Miguel was how he looked on his first album cover. He had on rocker boots that were probably heavier than him, like motorcycle super heavy boots. And we started How Many Drinks the first day I met him.
Wow.
Then he was like, nah, this is too R&B. I don't want to be here. I want something with guitars on it. So then that's how we ended up with the track for All I Want Is You. because it had guitars on it and it didn't sound so R&B. And he still wrote a focus R&B record on it. So since the day I met Miguel, he's been on his guitar mission.
Mm.
And then, you know, of course, he got his first album done. Then when he got back to Kaleidoscope Dream, you know, within Kaleidoscope Dream, it was the same thing. He wanted guitars. So then we ended up having the Kaleidoscope Dream track. And then even the end of How Many Drinks, I kind of ended up adding guitars to it to bring it back to his art dealer sheet, Guitar Miguel Flow. So this new album is definitely in guitar mode and even a little bit more like a, you know, garage band rocker from LA, yeah, which he's always been on from the beginning. But now he got a chance to go all the way there with it. But once again, it was there from day one as far as I saw it. And after we did the song Face the Sun, we probably almost like damn near started mixing. He performed it somewhere and I think Lenny was there and Lenny heard it. And then he's like, yo, Lenny wants to play guitar on it. I was like, word? All right, cool. So that ended up happening like in the 11th hour.
So the song was already made.
Song was, yeah.
And that was added after he'd already performed it.
He performed it one time, probably about 3 months ago, two or three months ago. So that's something that happened like right, you know, almost as the album was on the way out the door. Lenny right. wanted to play on it. And then Lenny ended up doing some solos on it.
How do you say no to Lenny, right?
It was great because it's like he got a chance to get some feedback on it before it was totally in the plastic
right.
and add another touch to it. So it was great to be able to do that.
It's just, it's funny looking at what Miguel is now because it started here. This was right. off of the first album, All I Wanted You, the title track. This is the song that introduced me to Miguel. And I fell in love with it because I was familiar with the sample mm-hmm. and the groove that it was in. So when I just heard the opening, doom, 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 doom.
Right.
And then you actually get in the record, it's a dope record. Then yeah. you read the credits and, oh, Salaam Remy.
Yeah, that was just me playing guitar. I actually had made the track for CeeLo.
Okay.
That was the track I made when we were working on the Lady Killer album.
Okay.
And CeeLo, I was like, yo, go ahead and be the Atlanta James Bond. Because originally, it was supposed to be Lady Killer 009. Mm. We put it out in 2009. And then it was like, all right, well, here you go, your Lady Killer. And he had a song called The Thriller's Home on it that he never finished. Every once in a while, yeah, I see you gave Miguel that Thriller's Home track. He did a hype. He put all them backgrounds on it. You know what I'm saying? But once again, Miguel heard it. And, you know, that was our first session. And he basically, I was like, yo, yeah, let's go. And he was singing, had a bunch of melodies. I was like, yo, so what you going to do?
Mm.
He's like, I don't know what to say. Tell the truth. Can you leave the room? And we was in my crib working. So I was like, all right, cool, go ahead. And he basically poured his heart out on it. But once again, Miguel wrote structured songs. So what he did to that four-bar loop turned out to be a key record for him.
Incredible. And then it's just interesting that How Many Drinks, which was a key record off of Kaleidoscope Dream, is mm-hmm. actually the first record that you guys started working on.
Yeah, we
on.
Did it beforehand. Yeah, exactly.
And then had the foresight. So it doesn't make the first album, but just yeah. ends up being one of the pivotal records on the second album.
Exactly. We went back for it. Mark Pitts, you know, Mark Pitts made it happen because he was like, yo, so well, you did what you wanted to do. Why can't we use this again? Like, why it doesn't fit? You know, whatever it was. He made it work.
Right. And you know, as a producer, just talk about your role in the studio, because I feel like, you know, you really work and get the best out of the artists that mm-hmm. you work. Like, you understand each artist that you work with and kind of cater to them and get the best out of them. Like you said, you was able to get the best out of Miguel by telling him, just tell the truth. You right. had to leave the room for it.
Right.
But you got the best out of him.
I mean, I think for me, you know, it's kind of crazy. I was looking at it yesterday and I was like, yeah, I guess next year is my 30th anniversary of my first credit, which feels crazy for me to say that I had records out for 30 years.
Well, how old were you when you got your first credit?
14.
Wow.
And this isn't the Curtis Blow?
Yeah, the Curtis Blow record. Yeah, that was. But I made records before that. That was the first one that came out. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, you know, I was a kid doing stuff and my dad was in the business working. But when it comes down to being in the studio, I know how to make beats. You know, I pride myself on doing anything from an orchestra to a drum machine to on my iPhone, I can make a track. Like, it doesn't make a difference. I know how to program. I know how to play instruments. I can do all that stuff. But it doesn't make a difference unless somebody tells a story on it that makes a difference. And that's what my whole goal is, getting people comfortable enough to tell the story, to be right there, to make it on point. And what I'm able to do is, most of the artists I work a lot with, they're kind of like they're not everybody's best friend. They're nice, but you know, whether it's Nas or the late Amy Winehouse or Miss Lauryn Hill or, you know, Jasmine Sullivan. Who are you? Let me look at you again. Okay, I'm not sure. Well, yeah, we'll get up. Okay, cool. Deuces. So we kind of have a similar personality, introverted thing that we can be in our own zone. And I just kind of got a chemistry with them where I'm able to tell them, yo, so what are you going to say again? What's your story? I'm back to the point. What are you talking about? Why are we here? Where are we going? Okay, did you hit all your notes? Perfect. Let's roll. Now I'm going to make an interesting track around it that makes everybody, you know, catch a moment.
You know, one artist, and one of my favorite artists, and I think it was one of our best episodes. All of our episodes are our best episodes. But Rico Love came up here a couple of weeks ago to promote his album, and he has a song called Run For Me. Mm-hmm. And Chris actually asked him the question, a very key question that led to you, that the song is about 2 minutes. It's a real short song, almost like an interlude, and asked, well, why was the song so short? Mm-hmm. And his answer was basically because Salaam Remy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when the song, you say what you have to say until, you know, what you said. I want to play back a piece of this episode, man, because he talked about you. He really bigged you up. I think Rico is a phenomenal writer and one of really the best writers in the biz today. And he credits that to you. So I want to play. You want to hear this playback a little bit? Hear what he had to say?
Yeah, let's hear what he said.
It's real uncomfortable for Salaam, because Salaam is a real humble dude. But
scratching his chin right now. Yeah, I can't see.
Can I give a Salaam Remy story?
Go ahead, please.
All right, cool. So I meet Salaam Remy. I'm so excited. Everybody's like, this is when I was before I had super hits. I had maybe like a half a hit out on the radio. And I was bubbling. See how it works
he
in the
industry?
He
started out on Confessions. He said this is when I had half a hit.
He said he was bubbling.
But I was bubbling. But you still wasn't, I wasn't that guy.
Ouch.
So Verdict was still out during the Confessions. So people were like, how the industry works is, it's like everybody will talk about one little writer, producer, artist. Like, yo, he's coming up. And, you know, you heard about blah, blah, blah. You heard about this person. He's next. I heard some songs in the studio. Nothing really on the radio yet, but I heard some. And that's where I was. That's the position I was in. So they was like, go down to Miami to work with Salaam Remy. This is before I lived in Miami. So I go down there. And I go down there, and I'm sitting in the room with him. He walks in some flip-flops, you know, like real cool fly, you know. And he says, you ever heard an album called Hear My Dear by Marvin Gaye? And I said, nah. He said, yeah, Marvin Gaye got a big divorce from his wife. And this is how he's talking. He had a big divorce from his wife, and his wife was Berry Gordy's sister. And in the divorce settlement, the judge granted that all the proceeds from his next album would go to his ex-wife. And he wrote songs about their relationship, and he called the album Here, My Dear.
Mm.
And I said, oh, that's dope. He said, I want you to listen to that. Why don't you listen to that tonight when you go to your hotel room, listen to it. I said, cool. Then he just stood back and looked at me and said, all right. Nice meeting you.
Salaam, do you have a recollection of this night?
No, I'm really clear. I gave him that. I gave him a couple other things too. Well, you know, it was once again the thing about writing perspective. Like, it's easy to say, I love you or I hate you. But to actually have the, you know, ability to tell your story. And the song on that album is When Did You Stop Loving Me, When Did I Stop Loving You, because he just basically tells a whole story melodically. Musically it's going there, but he kind of went there with something and kind of, you know, gave it a perspective. I always talk about writers finding their poetic license. Adele said, I set fire to the rain, or I'm chasing pavements. That's not a simple way to say whatever's going on. Or I talked to Neo about, you know, that answer machine. Got to change my answer machine because I'm not with you. Like, I was like, that saved your life right there. The fact that you started the song in the answer machine to explain why you and the girl broke up because you're so sick of love songs.
Right.
It was the perspective that made the pen game extra strong. And that's for me, like every artist I work with that's done well, they're a writer. Miguel, Jazz, Nas, Amy, like, they all were writing. And there was a point when, you know, when I first did Jasmine Sullivan, the label wanted different people to write with her who were hot at the time. And then we did Lions, Tigers, and Bears, and they realized there is no better writer than her.
Right.
And the same thing with Amy. Had other people in, then we did songs, and they were like, she's her writer. She has her confidence, and I think that's really important.
Oh, man, that's great. But, damn, man, you...
Slum, I want to ask you one thing, and I hate to cut you off, Rob, but in acting, we learn that the most important thing, like anybody could be an actor, but to be a great actor, you need to get in tune with your feelings. You need to let that guard down. You need to be able to tell a story, and you have to be able to make the audience actually believe that story.
Right.
So it has to be almost like your real life doesn't matter. It's what you're doing on the screen that people are believing is you. Right. Do you ever find like artists in the studio, maybe that's their biggest conflict, being able to, like you said, for Miguel, he asked you to leave the room.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like their biggest problem is actually getting into with their feelings and being able to let all that emotion out and all that hurt? Or it's do you think they just really don't know any better?
I mean, this is really unfortunate, but I'm really good at, you know, making people feel comfortable enough to tell their sad feelings.
Right.
Like I've sold a lot of sad girl records. You know what I'm saying? It's part of what it is. The problem with that is they write so autobiographically that sometimes it takes a long time to get that album after the album that does well. All my feelings are on my sleeve and I put it out there. Okay, write it again. But I'm happy now. I don't know what to say. Or, you know what, I don't know how I feel about this relationship. I can't finish this album. Like, I felt like different artists, you know, when, say, Jasmine Sullivan, when she was working on this last reality show album, some of the songs were reality, some of them were her writing about other people, but a lot before, she normally wrote about something that happened in some way or another. Same thing with Amy, same thing with Lauryn Hill. Like, so when you're writing from that, so much of a autobiographical thing, if your life is now in limbo, everything's going right, you're rich, your things is going perfect, we all want you now. Hold on, I don't have to write about y'all never wanted me before. It's like, you get a Drake perspective, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And now Drake is like, yo, I got this, is what I gotta write about. Why? This is what's happening.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like the same thing. You really need to find that space. And for me, being an acting coach, I guess, if that's the case, you know, and trying to find, help people find that space, then it is being a good storyteller, which is where someone like Nas continues.
Right. You've worked with Mary J. Blige before, and I feel like with Mary, one of the things, one of the sad things is Mary was probably at her best, My Life, and Pain. Mm-hmm. And then when she got happy and you know, I don't know if people appreciated Mary the same way. And not just Mary, like, we like our artists in pain for some reason.
I think it's partially the pain. I think it's also, like, when I work with Nas, it's like, yo, can you say the rhyme with the smoke mouth, though? I want to hear him talk out the shot of his neck. And I want to hear that energy because there's something about that blues note. With Mary, I think it's similar. Even if she was talking about my life is so good right now, we still want to hear the music that sounds like it has some passion, it's a push in it, because she's the only one that can give it to us in that way.
Right.
So what we're looking for from Mary is the intensity of the notes in the music and the intensity in her voice and how it all comes off.
Talking about intensity and Amy Winehouse, you worked on her first album on Frank, you and Commissioner Gordon, right?
Yep.
How did you guys meet up with Amy? Because when we speak about Amy and we speak about a phenomenal talent, we speak about a great artist, but there was pain there, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the thing with like what Amy, Jasmine Sullivan, Lauryn Hill all have in common is I met them all at 18. And no matter how it goes, like when I was 21 or 30 or whatever different age, they were still 18. So an 18-year-old female in particular, normally it's even when they're the most intelligent, they're also getting a grip on their feelings, what I'm going to do, what I'm not going to do, my independence from my family, where I'm at, how I want to tell my story. And I worked on her songs before she had her deal. Like, we worked on some songs and then she got her deal. But I got to her through our publisher, Guy Moot in London. So this is all, I guess, you know, it's part of the Amy documentary now.
Right.
But basically, I worked on some songs with her. Commissioner Gordon worked on some songs with her. A few other people, but Gordon and I ended up doing most of the album. But also the bond that she and I had was that I knew how to pull something out of her that she didn't know she had and kind of really mentored her and kind of shaped it. And that was just something for me that was inspirational as well, because she had all this talent being 18 and sounded a certain way. And then as a person, she was just a mouth. She always had something smart to say. So I was like, what'd you say? Put it in the lyrics. Or what'd you say now? Put it in the lyrics. Or you can't think of a line? Call your ex-boyfriend. Why? Because if he answers, then he's going to say something. You'll be mad. If he doesn't answer, then you're going to cuss him out. And then we'll have the next line. We'll be done with the song. So I had that whole flow with her, you know, all through the career, even when we went back to Black and, you know, up until she passed. But it was just my homegirl like that. Like, I could basically talk to her and be like, why don't we go with this perspective or that perspective? Because it wasn't a question on whether or not she could sing it or whether or not I could create whatever track on earth for it. It was just really about her expressing it lyrically.
Right. And that's a key to production that I think a lot of people don't get. Production doesn't necessarily mean beat makers, producing the records, creating the vibe and everything so this record can come out the way that it needs to come out. I mean, you're almost like a Phil Jackson of soul music, man. Like, he got 11 championships.
Yeah.
You know, he's running the triangle offense. I don't know what he's doing with the Knicks right now, but I got faith. But it's more than just being at the console.
It's definitely, because for me, the part of my career that really took off was when I realized it wasn't about the beats. It was about the song. Like, the beats were the beats. The same track, you know, even working in reggae, there'll be one track in 20 songs. Two or three of the best songs are the ones that everybody's going to know. And then when you hear that beat, you're going to think of the best song.
Right.
So it's kind of like it wasn't about the track. Like, I can always make the track. It's about getting the best song and getting the best lyric.
And so Salaam does reggae too, y'all. Did you know he did Ani Kamozi? The High Stepper record, right?
Here comes the High Stepper. Yeah.
It's a classic.
I think it's more about creative direction with you. You know, you need somebody that's not just going to sit in the room and say, yeah, okay, it sounds all right, you know, and the beat's there, the lyrics are there, but instead somebody who's going to say, no, do it this way, or make you think about stuff that are going to evoke an emotion and make a better song.
Yeah, in the long run. When it comes down to it, I guess I have Nas calls me a psychologist who knows how to make music. You know what I'm saying? So one way or another, it's just whatever the inspiration is. You know, just figuring out what it is. It might be sitting down listening to some music and we get inspired by that. Whatever it is, just my job has been since I was a kid talking to people through a glass. And if they didn't give me nothing good, then I didn't eat. Mm. I didn't have a record to sell. So if an artist came in and we didn't get a record, then there was no record to sell. I wasted a day, a week. I can't do that.
It was dope.
I gotta get it tonight.
Right.
You know, if you give me an acapella, this is kind of whack. I'm like, how can I mix this? What am I gonna put on the intro? How that beat gonna go? How you gonna now feel it? I was remixing records, you know what I'm saying, for many years. And then a lot of the remixes turned into productions.
Right. That's dope. Speaking of, you spoke of Nas, obviously, who you have a very close relationship with, and Amy as well. She had a record that Nas confirmed was about how there was always speculation, but the Me and Mr. Jones record. Mm-hmm. On Back to Black. What was it like creating that record? How did that record come about from your perspective?
Well, most of Amy's songs, like what people don't realize about her is that she's a musician. So she wrote all her songs on guitar, a lot of them. So she had an acoustic version of a song called Fuckery.
Which she famously says in the song.
Yeah.
Basically, so she had it, and everybody's like, oh, my God, Amy's cussing again. We're never going to get on radio. So she had it for probably a year or so before I messed around with it, and I heard it. And I was like, okay. So then at first, when we first started Black to Black, I did more of a jazzy slick Rick with the shakers and kind of jazzy organ. Nas, girl, you with me, you know, slick Rick and everything before. Like, I had all that stuff put together in it. And basically, the song is about her telling off a guy who's a promoter, who was one of her ex-boyfriends. Look, you didn't get me in the Slick Rick gig, but when Nas comes to town, you better let me in, because it's me and Mr. Jones that night. You better let me in. So that was her perspective of writing the song. So then when we ended up doing the song over again, and same simple, same lyrics, same everything else, we decided to do it more in a doo-wop type of energy. We did it over, and then she added the intro, and now we retitled it Me and Mr. Jones. Half the people who didn't like Fuckery didn't realize Me and Mr. Jones is the same song.
Right.
And that was really what it was. But also, she felt a connection because they're born the same day, September 14th. So, Mr. Destiny, 9 and 14, nobody stands in between me and my man. It's me and Mr. Jones. But also, Made You Look was something that I used on Amy's first album, In My Bed, because when I originally did Made You Look, I actually wanted to put Amy on it.
Wow.
Kind of talking like the Bad Boys Inspector Gadget record.
Better know what you got, right? You know what I mean?
I tell you. I want to put Curtis Blow and Amy on that track. And I was like, word? All right, cool. Leave the studio for a little while. I'll be back. And then he did something else. But so then when I ended up using that, so she always felt like, we got to have a Nas song on every album, and we got to have a Nas song, just because it was part of it. Do a reggae song, do a Nas song. It's part of my albums, how I finish them up.
Right. Were you able to see the documentary yet?
Yes, sir.
What was your feelings on it?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I didn't really want to do it for a long time. And I'm not really, you know, as you said, I'm not that guy who's running around A, B, C, and D. Nick Shemansky, who actually was a person who found Amy, you know, in someone else's session, basically. She was with her boy at a session, and he met her. Well, I think she was maybe even 16 or 17, then ended up managing her as a scout. And then he was pretty much had like a lot of the early footage and pieces. He kept calling me about it, so I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. Everybody was calling me about it. So I said, I took a couple of years, but then I did the documentary part. And the director, you know, he did a good job at telling the story as he got it, as he wanted to tell it. But I let him tell his story. His story is different than what I've seen. But not different, it's just the parts that he's seen. So he put together a really good movie, the best he could do. That's all I'll say. But a lot of people, of course, been talking to me about it over the last few days, and it's interesting. You know, like, you know, my attorney hit me today, wow, a lot of people talking about it. But my perspective is they're talking about something I did 10 to 12 to 13 years ago that you maybe just found out about, and then she's been gone for 4 years.
Right.
So it's great that it's documented and someone knows about it, but once again, I live my life in the forward.
Okay, now I feel you. And speaking about the forward, Louder Than Life and Remy Fly, what's the plans on the label side of things? Because I've been in your office, he has a beautiful office that I feel like you probably spend a little bit of time in, and most time in the studio. I don't know what gets you in trouble.
I'm actually not. It's actually probably the way around, other way around. I spend a lot more time in my office than the studio nowadays.
Okay.
Studio's like secondary for me at this point, because I just felt like I'd done so many records. Mm. Put out what I did already, and then I'll be back. But what do I have? I have Jordan Sparks on my label. All
right.
Album right here, right now.
Wait, hold on now. Jordan Sparks famously came off of a breakup. Do you coach this out of her now? Do you be like, you know what?
Our album was pretty much done by then.
Okay.
Yeah, our album was done by then for the most part. And maybe one or two things were on the tail end of that. But the majority of the songs on the album, I've been done way before that.
You're like, call Jason Derulo. You can't finish that song?
Yeah.
Call Jason. Nah.
I mean, definitely wasn't none of that.
Jordan Sparks.
So Jordan's album right here, right now, that'll be out in August.
Okay.
A couple of videos coming, cool. You know, we got a couple of songs. I mean, there's a lot of songs on there across the board, but one of the singles is a song called They Don't Give, that I did with Babyface. Wow. That Babyface and myself.
In 2015? Like,
right?
Oh, yeah. I feel like, when's the last record that Babyface did?
He worked on Beyonce's album. Love on Top on it.
He
did some songs on there.
He sure did.
He's been around doing stuff, but I just know I'm that dude. So I love going.
I'm
just that dude who likes going back working with people that I always admire. You know what I'm saying? So I'm gonna find Babyface. I'm gonna find, you know, I got other projects that I work with some of my favorite producers,
right,
from the 80s or whenever it is. That musician that I always like to record, I'm gonna find him, and then let's sit down and talk. Let's figure out how we can do something. I'm the reach out guy who's always going to do that. So Jordan, it's coming. What else? I have Heidi's Coyote out now.
Okay.
Which, you know, for the R&B head, it's more than R&B. It's jazz fusion, something else, plus something else. But I think it's probably one of the best four-piece bands in the world.
You always need something else.
Right.
They're next level. Else. They're like, okay, where are you going? Have you heard the Heidi's Coyote album called Choose Your Weapon?
I've heard you played me joints. I feel like last time
I probably played you some of the first album.
Yeah, okay.
Nakamura that had Q-Tip on it, but their album is next level.
Okay.
Is Choose Your Weapon their last album that's
Choose
been put
Your Weapon is the new one that came out in May.
Okay.
So they're actually touring it now, sold out all over the world, so they're moving with it. But Four Piece, you know, next level band from Australia, so they're on my Fine Buddha imprint.
Right.
Liam Bailey, definitely Liam now.
Yeah.
That's out there. Mac Wiles is mixing Summer Heat, next level Knock Heat. So that's coming.
I heard, I'm not at liberty to give any detail, but Chris, I heard some new Mac Wiles records.
That's not fair, and I don't even want to talk about that because I haven't heard it.
I've heard some new Mac Wiles records.
So they coming, feeling really good. You know what I'm saying? We in mix mode, setting it up. It could be Atom Bomb any day now. On the Mac album, I have an artist by the name of Cry. Group name is House of Cry, singular female from Illinois, just outside of Chicago.
Okay.
I'm gonna put out her first EP in a couple weeks. Incredible. Top to bottom, talented, multi-instrumentalist, engineers, produces, writes herself, 5-octave range. Nobody could touch her.
Wow.
Nobody. And I've worked with a lot of people, nobody could touch her.
And her name is, you said?
Cry.
Cry.
Yeah, she was raised right outside of Chicago, Chris. Some of the best cooking you ever had.
I was waiting for that.
Is that what it is?
What is it? The R. Kelly? You remember the R. Kelly line?
Yeah.
When a woman's fed up, right?
Yeah, when a woman's fed up.
No, that's
so
right.
I couldn't resist. As soon as he said that, I just heard him talking to R. Kelly.
So I gave you a little pause. I was like, all right.
All right, there you go. But yeah,
definitely. It's like, all right, cut the bullshit.
There you go. Well, you know, Cry. I'm going to tell her that when I talk to her later. But Cry's a super next level, so I think y'all going to be great with that. What else I got coming? Kali Buzz about to drop an EP because he's on tour. Me and Busta, conglomerate collaborated on Jado.
Jado got to come. Working with Jado now.
Yeah, Jado. Since we, I don't give a about nothing. Record is on.
He's
cursed. On our label as well, and then we got a couple other songs coming out. Sweet the Kid, Your Mother's Other Son EP will be out 17th. What else I got? I got a whole bunch of stuff.
anything coming up? Anything coming up with Nas?
Nas? I don't know. Nas, he be around. He's in the city. You know what I'm saying? Nas always cooking something.
Right.
At any given point, he could just be like, aha, take that.
You also worked a lot with him on his last album, Life is Good. And though Nas, you know, we like to focus more on the R&B music, that was... R&B in a lot of ways, when you talk about really pouring your heart out and your feelings and telling your stories, and I feel like Nas did that probably more than ever on this last album.
Yeah, I mean, know what it was? That was the companion to Street's Disciple, which some people didn't always get all the way into the second CD.
Right.
But I remember when we were making the Street's Disciple album, I was like, yo, why are you talking about this right now on this album? And he's like, yo, I got to do it while I'm living it. You know what I'm saying? While I'm getting married, or I'm going to make a song while I get married. While I'm talking about my dad and we're getting our relationship together after my mom passed, let's talk about that. Let's put these songs out there as I'm living it. And then, you know, he was able to make his Hear My Dad with Life is Good. You know what I'm saying? Because that's one of his favorite albums as well. So Life is Good. At first, when he said he wanted to do it, I was like, really? And then I realized, yo, it's dope. We're making people say life is good that maybe not wouldn't have said it. But once again, the songs just came out that way, and Bye Baby ended up being the song that was his breakup song.
Right, yeah. With Aaron Hall on the record. Like.
Yeah, I mean, that was you know, me and my hip-hop history. Loving Goodbye Love is probably one of my favorite records ever.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Period. And Teddy Riley actually recently told me that it was two different songs. I was like, yo, there was no hook to the end. Like, what's going on? It was two different songs. People kept asking me, where's that other part, and then we just put it all together. But once again, that was something from the soul that musically always touched me, and I had to sample it and find a way to flip it.
Nah, you definitely flipped it. It's funny, I put Chris on the other day because the dope shit is that we put each other on the different music,
right?
And we were talking about Aaron Hall on another episode when we had Eric Bellinger up here, and we were talking about I Miss You, which is an amazing record, but takes on a whole different meaning when you see the music video.
Right,
because the music video flipped it. And
sad video, and I wish you wouldn't have told me how the video went. Because he told me before. Well, you know, we talked about it on that episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of already expecting, you know, what the outcome was. But even when I watched the video, I still was like, you know, jaw dropped. And everybody was hitting us on Twitter saying, I hate you guys for making me watch that video again. It's so sad. I'm crying. But you know what? That to me is some of the most beautiful work.
Right.
Nah, man. But Salam, man, I definitely appreciate having you up here, brother. I mean, you know, I hold you in high regard.
Thanks, bro.
And I'm a fan. Your hip hop knowledge is extensive. Even like I remember. I'm gonna go back. This is kind of like off topic, but I remember when Rick Ross, French Montana, and Drake dropped "Stay Scheming," right? Mm-hmm. Hard record, right? And everybody's like, "Oh, this is hard." And Salam is the first one on Twitter. But yo, Rob, remember this? Like, "Stay Scheming" was a Nas record. Originally, Nas did "Stay Scheming."
Yeah,
it was an old mixtape record that they found and sampled, and not everybody knew it. So when everybody's in the glow of what "Stay Scheming" is, the teacher over here, Salam Remy, is like, "Nah, but this is where it came from." And I always appreciate every time he drops a jewel, a story, might reveal a sample or inspiration. Like, it just opens you up to like 10 other records or 5 other artists that you never heard of, and you go down this rabbit hole of music. And I thought it was just important to have you up here and kind of just talk about some of the stuff that you've done and celebrate what you've done, because it's extremely important, my brother. Yes.
Thanks. I mean, like I said, I do it as an inspiration pit, if you want to call it, because I want people to always be able to find inspiration in it. And that was one of the things that hit me when Amy passed. It was basically that I met her after my 30th birthday. She was gone before my 40th. Most of the people that influenced her had already passed away before she was born. So a Billie Holiday, Etta James, like all these different people. She came, took that on. And then now there'll be somebody that's born after she's already gone that might find one of her songs and be inspired by her writing or whatever else it is. You know what I'm saying? So I just look at it like, that's what we have. We have inspiration. We have jewels, little things we could tell people. And these things are going to last way beyond our existence, just like the music is. It's going to stick and do what it needs to do. Emotionally, it needs to touch somebody that you never even knew of.
Right.
Met, heard, saw. Like, I listen to 50-year-old records all the time. And I'm open. 60, 70-year-old records. And I'm open. Then I'm playing for my little brother, and he might be open. But he's way younger than me. Then he'll play for somebody else. So that's the same thing we keep going through. You know, the music is actually a way for us to capsulize the moment, leave it there, that somebody else can get up with it.
Yeah, great music is timeless. We talk about it all the time. There's no expiration date on a great song.
At all. You know, I can play songs that I did 20 years ago, and somebody be like, "I like that. Can I cut it?" And I'm like, "All right, go ahead." You know what I'm saying? Let's keep it moving.
Real quick, you ain't answer the question, though.
What's up?
Miguel or Frank Ocean?
You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say that I have no problem telling somebody that they're better than me at doing what they do, not doing what I do. You know what I'm saying? You great at what you do. So it's great for Miguel to feel his way, like it's what he does. But they're different artists.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's certain things that Frank Ocean has his own swag with it. And Miguel was maybe more focused in a certain way at a certain time on different music. And the same thing with The Weeknd. Right. I feel like The Weeknd has grown now to a certain point that makes his older music even sound better.
Yo, he's having such a moment right now, though. I remember, because I think, and I've always been a big Weeknd fan, those first 3 mixtapes. Again, I was going through some. Maybe it came at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was definitely like in that zone when House of Balloons, Thursday, and Echoes of Silence. Kissland didn't do it as much for me. I think Kissland was a little bit rushed. But the moment that he's having right now, and that I Can't Feel My Face record that has such a groove to it, you know, I think it opens him up. To his lane. I don't think there's nobody else in that lane, and it's cool, so it's just more variety for music.
It's all that, and it's great. And I mean, the fact is that Miguel's first, you know, couple of All I Wanted You wasn't a real big record for him. It hit the heads, it hit the people. We loved it. But Sure Thing and Quickie were records that he had on a mixtape before they ever put out his album.
Yeah.
So it's all, everybody has to find their lane, find their music, find their space. Frank is a different artist.
Right.
Yeah, Miguel's a different artist.
And we look forward to it. And they're great artists. Like, you know, we've had, there's some garbage artists out there too, but I think we're in a great time for music. So when this Miguel album comes, embrace it. I know I went on record and said that I like Kaleidoscope Dream better than Wild Heart, and that's my preference. But I'm still getting into Wild Heart, and that doesn't mean Wild album. Heart's a bad album.
Yeah, it's way just, different album.
It's a different album. Yeah. It's just not. Yeah. I don't think it's the same. I mean, there may be Coffee in the Morning and one or two other songs sound similar to what could have been on Kaleidoscope Dream, but it's different. But also, I will say this. I saw him perform some of Wild Heart the other day, and it takes on a whole nother life compared to what it is on the record.
I could imagine with all the instruments that he uses on this album.
Because a lot of this album is Miguel in his room, probably about this size, just doing what he wants to do in his own little creative space. Mm. When you really get into him doing it live, like the records almost sound liberated. That's what I told him. It sounded like he just finally let loose and went all the way there with it.
He's earned that. Well, it's dope, you know, and also the record is only a week old, so like, I'm gonna give it some more time. I like the record, you know what I'm saying? I think it's a dope record. He's a dope artist, so he's never gonna give you anything that's
exactly,
you know. But we'll see. There's a lot of records too. I remember I got caught a lot of shit because I didn't like Illmatic the very first time I heard Illmatic. I didn't get it.
What year did you hear it in?
Exactly when it dropped. You know why though? But think about what rap was. Back then, rap was Onyx, Dos FX. I had a 6 CD changer, and it was Onyx was in there, Dos FX. I think Enter the Woo was in there, and by the time you get to Illmatic, the vibe is way different. It took me about a week to figure out how brilliant Illmatic was.
Really?
Because I was in an Onyx, Dos FX, Wu Tang, Rough, Rugged, and Raw, and this was smooth back. You know,
it was like wrestling,
right?
Basically, you on a wrestling and somebody try to come up with this book, and you like, book?
Right.
I'm going to suplex you. You know what I'm saying? Onyx, if you look back at it, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it was theatrics.
Exactly.
It was everybody running around crying. You know what I'm saying? It was a whole nother thing. It was the Wu-Tang was way more animated. You know, people were looking at the and everything else.
But that was most of where rap was at.
At that moment.
At that moment. Illmatic, obviously a classic.
But Illmatic was crazy from the tape. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what it really was. I mean, never eat me, never put me in your box if you shit eat tapes. The whole thing, it was just like, did you hear what he said?
Right.
Wait a minute, who are you? Is he in the room? Did he know my box eats tapes?
Right.
Like, he just psyched everybody out.
Right.
Sleep is the cousin of death? What?
Right.
Wait a minute, who are you? You know what I'm saying? And that's really what came out of that. But like I said, everybody gets their moment. Yeah. And then sometimes we do need to step away from self to appreciate it, probably.
20 plus years later, obviously. We'll all see who the prophet is. You know what I'm saying? But Salam, man, where can they find you, man? You want to plug? If you guys want to talk to Salam on Twitter and tell him how amazing he is, man, where can they get you? Listen, it's Salam.
That's the humble Salam right there.
Salam Remy. So I'm going to do it. This is where I got to do my PR side. Hit him on Twitter at Salam Remy, man.
At Salam Remy, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook page.
You're going to see a lot of pictures on his Instagram of different flights. Just different airplane pictures.
Out the window. I got to be creative all types of ways. You know what I'm saying? I got to look out. Wow, I got an eye. Let me try to find some other way to get that off. But,
I realize everything I'm doing wrong with my life just on Salam's Instagram. Especially in the winter. You'd be like, man, it's cold here in New York.
Yeah, I'm out.
Salam is out.
Well, I live in Miami for almost 15 years now. So it's like, that's the thing. I'm a New Yorker at heart. No matter where I go, it walks with me.
Respect
it. But, you know, it feels good out in Miami.
Cool.
Being a New Yorker.
In the sun.
All right, my brother, man, Salam Remy, man, thank you for coming through, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me, and holler at me anytime.
Okay, cool. That's what it is, man. Thank you, man. Man, Salam Remy, man. Chris, man, I told you, you know, that's the homie, man. I told you about Salam, man.
Well, we've had him referenced so many times on this episode, on these episodes, so I feel like it was only a matter of time before we actually had him come up and show face.
Yeah, man, that was a lot of knowledge. And you know, what we like to do here, obviously, at Red Light Special is we like to kind of just bring you not just the artists, but the people who make these records happen. So Salam is somebody that you might not know unless you read the production credits, but he was behind so many of your favorite records.
Mm.
Another thing we like to do is just introduce to new talent, because I think in the world of R&B, it's hard. I don't know where a new R&B artist goes. I don't know if somebody who sings, like, where do you go to people to take you serious until you have the hit record. Mm-hmm. That's right. Number one. Where do you go? And we want to create that also. So that brings us to our next guest of the evening. Usually we just do one guest, but I felt like we had to do two guests. This brother, man, I had the pleasure of meeting this brother a couple of weeks ago. I hosted the Power premiere party at La Marina.
It's crazy.
Yeah, man. And you know, he's an actor, you know, and I was like, okay, this guy's dope. He's on the new season of Power 2. Mm. And I was like, wait, he just doesn't act. Mm. He sings too, and he has music. Oh, wait, hold on. This music is dope.
Right.
Like, wait, what do you mean 50 Cent signed? He's G-Unit? Like, When can we get this guy up? So shout out to my man Angel Martinez over at G-Unit, man. But I want to welcome to the show, the Red Light Special, for the first time, my man Rotimi, man. What's good, V?
What's going on, man?
I'm good, man. How you been, man?
Good. Working.
I see. Listen, man, you on Power, man. Look. I'm trying to figure out what's next. I don't know what you can or can't say. Uh-huh. But
how far have you seen?
Can I say how far I've really seen? I'm caught up.
We're all caught up now.
Y'all caught up?
Yeah,
the first five episodes. Okay. If I didn't know you in real life and I just knew your character Dre on Power, I'd be a little afraid to be in the room with you now.
I'm doing my job.
Wild boy.
I'm doing my job. You know, it took a lot to get to that point, man, because everybody who knows me knows that's not who I am. But it took a lot of studying and seeing, you know, reflecting back to people I knew, I grew up with, asking questions, how would you handle yourself in this situation? And just, you know, for me, another method, I used to take cold showers in the morning and just be pissed off all day. You know what I mean? And it would just keep me in that mindset of just like, all right, I'm agitated. So little things like that I just learned, you know, working with Kelsey Grammer in the past and other people too, you know what I mean?
Hold on. He said, well, we're working with Kelsey Grammer, we're just going to drop names out of nowhere.
I mean, you know, because I did the TV show Boss.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, and that was literally my first audition. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go to class and stuff, so I had to learn method in a way and situations, and he had to, you know, say, think about this. So that's how the whole cold shower was introduced. Like, if you're mad, you got to walk. Somebody tell you stay in this cold shower for 8 minutes. You're going to be pissed when you get out and mad at who told you. So handle that and keep that, whatever feeling that is, keep that. So Dre is just a product of a cold shower just all day.
I like that. Wow, that was so poetic and philosophical. That's amazing.
Hey, man, yeah.
Yo, next time I go into work, next time I go into MTV and I'm mad and he's like, yo, why are you pissed? I'm like, yo, it's a product of a cold shower. Like, but why are you so mad? And he had no hot water today. So acting and music, which came first and how do they play off of each other?
Music came first. I've been singing since I was six. Did the Apollo Theater when I was 15, won it twice. And
that's big.
Yeah, and that's kind of where it really started for me, like performing. And, you know, that kind of crowd is ready to boo. They're ready to hate. You know, they don't care if it's a kid or not. So you have to stand there and, you know, man up. So that after that first year, that first heckle, you be like, let me do this, and then it was never again. So it just kind of forced you, you know, to force you to just work on, be on your feet. But did that high school. I was in a group with Jay-Z's nephews. We had a group called MBH. Realized that, you know, this is really what I wanted to do. Hov would make us come to his living room in his apartment and literally perform all our records for him.
Hov. He's saying this like it's nothing.
He said Hov and Kelsey Grammer, like it was just nothing. Like these are just two guys.
No, but like it was just humbling just to see, and he dissected everything we did. Like he just proved how much of a musical genius he is. And just, you know, he was like, yo, if you keep doing this, you're gonna be a problem to each and every one of us. Went to college, went to Northwestern University, and was still doing music, touring, college tours, went overseas once, but did all that. And then acting came when I graduated. 4 months out of graduation, my manager at the time was like, yo, you should try acting, just try it. Cause I was just trying to get like a commercial, just some money, just to, you know, hold off, you know, doing the artist thing, it gets tough sometimes. So did that, and then the first audition happened to be Boss, and I got thrown into, you know, the acting world at that point.
You said you were in a group with Jay's nephews. Yeah. Which ones?
You know, Ramel, Ravel, Spanky.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Sam Hook.
I don't know him. I just know because he shouted them out on records. I just wanted to
You just wanted to ask.
But yeah. It was all of us, man, and that's kind of where I had to, like, you know, find myself, and with that backing, you can't be a slouch at all, right. You know. And you got to, and every week we had to come prepared with our music, you know. So it was just like for the boss. So right. It was a good time.
He never signed you?
Nah, we was too young. We was 16, 17. He wasn't, right. He wasn't gonna put us, put us there. We weren't ready yet.
Okay, and then now you with G-Unit.
Yeah.
How does that happen? What comes first? Does power come first? Yeah. Explain
the story.
I feel
like it all rolled out so smoothly. Like, we saw you on Power.
Yeah.
We did the question and answer at La Marina, and I feel like just right after that, it was like, oh, hey, by the way, here you go. Here's a record. And I'm like, he sings?
Yeah. It was, people think, oh, Fifth found me as a singer and put me on Power. Nah, it was legit audition. I auditioned for Power like everybody else. Actually sent my tape in. I didn't even go in yet. Sent my tape in like August 3rd. Waited 2-3 weeks to find out. Thought I didn't have it. So I moved on to the next thing. Shot another show. I was like, all right, cool, whatever. So then they called back like 2-3 weeks later, like, hey, can you come and meet the director and the creator of the show? Courtney and David Noller. Sat with them and they were like, do exactly what you just did in this audition tomorrow. And tomorrow was in front of stars and Lionsgate and executive producers and writers. So it was a whole rollout. And at that point, that's when I had booked it. So then the music part of it came. So if you watch the show, I'm Kane, I'm 50's right-hand man, and Kane's right-hand man. Mm-hmm. So I spent 8 hours a day with Fifth, but I never told him anything about music. Cause I saw how every person on the street would come up and be like, hey man, you know, I rap, I'm signed to this and this, I do this. And I saw how it would kind of make him, you know, not upset him, but it would just be like, all right, for sure. You know, he'll just kind of brush it. And so I was like, yo, he's going to either hear my music on the radio and ask me, or somebody's going to come to him and say, yo, this dude is dope. And one night, the A&R, Tony G, A&R came to a session of mine randomly in New York, heard Lotto, and then brought me to G-Unit the next day. And still didn't hit Fifth. Had no idea. It was still 3 months. And 3 months into it, Fifth happens to be in the office. And just comes in like, yo, little bro, what are you doing here? So I'm like, hey, Tony, bro.
We ain't filming today.
You know what I mean? We ain't filming. Like, what are you doing? You ain't Dre. So come in, and then he sees Tony. And Tony's like, yeah, he got some records. And then I play him Lotto. And that's when he's like, yo, I got to get on Lotto now. This is crazy. Why didn't you tell me? You know, so it was kind of like just natural, man. It was
coincidental.
And that's how I wanted it. You know, where it was like, you know, he heard it for himself, not doing me a favor. It was like, you know, this is undeniably dope, so let's work, you know. And I wanted to take a different approach than everybody else did.
That's dope. And you were at it. I mean, you didn't just come in doing, like, you had the While You Wait mixtape.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that. So this is something you've been grinding
at.
Oh,
man, you know, I've been honing my skills, you know, and trying to get better, man. All I could do was legit record the entire time I was filming Boss. So from 2011, 2012, I went on tour a little bit, and then I did Music Matters of a BET Spotlight artist. But still, it wasn't enough. I had no time to really focus on music. I didn't even have records that fit me at the time. I was trying to find myself. So it was a blessing to kind of have the show, because I was able to, you know, stay in the back and figure it out. So now, with this type of platform, it's time. You know, we know what we want. We know where we're going. We know exactly what records we want to execute. You know, how I want to sound. You know, create whatever. So it just worked perfectly. And, you know, it was just, Boss kept me relevant. You know, I can still walk into rooms and shake hands with certain people that were fans of the show, so you'd have their ear still. But musically, it allowed me to, you know, keep developing.
And do you feel like your lane right now, you want to focus more on the music, and now that you have a platform, mm-hmm. really expand on that? Or do you feel like since Power has done so well, now you want to venture out even into, like, film maybe?
No, I've done a couple films. Mm-hmm. But again, like, go back to your question, I think it goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. You know, music is a form of acting, and you're on stage, you're this figure, you know, you have to bring a certain part of yourself. You know, when you're in the studio, you have to be all of it, you have to be in touch with your feelings in all of it for it to be real, you know, whether it's a movie, TV, or act, or a song. So it's all the same, but, you know, I really want to just be the best in everything. That's my goal. You know, I don't want to have a, I don't want to be in a box. I just want people to say, yo, this is just a talented dude. Right. And then he happens to be in this film, or he happens to be on Power. He happens, you know, kind of like the Jamie Foxx formula, you know, that kind of thing. So
right. And then, you know, we just had Salam up here, and you know, Mac Wiles is his artist, and Mac took a similar route. Like, it's always hard to be the first one. Even you mentioned Jamie Foxx. Uh-huh. I feel like people didn't take Jamie seriously at first. Like, Jamie sung the theme song on the Jamie Foxx show. Right?
Yeah.
And we always knew Jamie Foxx could sing. And then, you know, he put him on Slow Jams, Kanye West, and it was like, ah, it's cool, but he was still kind of funny a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you heard, like, Unpredictable, and you was like, wait,
And, you know, I think he kind of, I don't know, I think he was purposely funny. Yeah, I don't think he was really, well, actually, no. I take that back, because his first album was actually kind of dope.
Right.
When he did
Unpredictable, because Unpredictable was the second one.
People didn't take it seriously because he's clowning, he's doing jingles on his show, and his tours would just be funny, you know, funny stuff. But you'd be like, wow, he really can sing. So when Blame It came out, and even Unpredictable, he was like, okay. But for me, I'm not a comedian, you know, and but, you know, he's talented enough that you still respect his voice. Mm. And but for me, I really want to just be completely serious, you know, and know that this is, I just happen to act, guys, you know, this is what music is, really what I've been doing, you know, majority of my life. So.
And I don't think your role takes away from the music at all, because somebody like Jamie Foxx, you say people just thought he was funny all the time.
Yeah.
They get used to your character.
Yeah.
Whatever you played. So they got used to him being on the show and being super funny, and then you come out and you're singing and they're like, they're used to the funny Jamie, but they don't know that Jamie is his own person, and now this is him and his music. Mm-hmm. I feel like your role, you're not a comedian. Uh-uh. You know, you have a serious role, and it's, you know, even though it's a little, you know, dramatic, and but that helps the music, if anything, you know, because in R&B, I mean, it's all about emotions and just letting everything out.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you know, I'm just throwing this out there, Courtney, why can't Dre just sing while he's killing somebody? Like, what's more gangster like that? Dad.
See, that would be so crazy. Dad, I don't know if I'll let you back in this room after that.
Let me get this song on. Let me get this murder off.
You know, it's funny because that was a point. Like, I remember, you know, playing him records. So I got records that are like really ballad driven, and I got records that are just sexual. And he was like, Lotto makes the most sense. That is what fits the character, where it makes sense, where we can get on it and people can still see the, you know, the relationship. So just being in the room with him is just, he literally broke down exactly what was going to happen. This happened in December. What we're doing now is exactly what he envisioned the record to be at this very moment. And it's kind of crazy to see it. Like how you said, he just rolled out perfectly. That was planned out.
Always according
always
to plan,
a
plan for him.
Yeah,
and I think it's such a dope record. I think it starts off one way. It doesn't stay the same, the whole record. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and then you go into your little singing and your little tunes, and it's kind of, it's not too, you know, R&B tends to be very sad and, you know, depending on who the artist is, but I think it has a well blend of everything, and it's a perfect record to kind of set you off in the music world.
Thank you.
Well, let's play a little bit of it for the listeners who haven't heard. You know, we always joke we don't play full songs up here in Red Light Special because we don't want to get sued.
Or killed licensing. With this one.
Even though we have friends. We have friends at G-Unit, so I think we'll be all right. But let's play Lotto right now.
Sir.
It's 50. Wrote to me.
Can I get a ch-ch-ch-ch? Are we still doing that?
Seven digits. Why call a ticket when I can come through the visit? It won't be long for a nigga get to know you right, show you right. Couple hot spots we can go tonight. I watched her, waist train proper. Either it's genetics or she got the right doctor. Strobe lights when she moved to seduce me. Make a nigga won't go sushi.
I just hit the Lotto, pull up to the vid, pop a bottle. Tell me what you want and I got it. She said she from Nevada, said she go to school in Chicago. But she wanna dance and she model. Girl with a body like that and an ass like that. Drop it to the floor, bring it right back. You know I be on, baby, just like that. You know what to do with it. It's just the way I feel with you, baby. It's just the way I feel with you.
I just hit the lotto.
Dope.
Bro, Timmy,
lotto. I fuck with it.
That's dope, man. I mean, you know, we all been there.
Yeah, yeah.
We all been there.
You know? You know?
Do you write as well?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. You know, I try to write. I try to be a part of every, you know, record that I do. Just to really give a piece of me, you know. I've probably have one record that we're probably going to use so far that is not me. Mm. But I remember, you know, I've been songwriting since I was 7, 8, you know, and it was poetry, then it turned into even trying to rap at one point, then it turned into back to singing. So I've always enjoyed the pen part of it. But going back to the past, man, like, I was trying to do what was hot instead of tell, like, my story. Mm. So that's when it started clicking as a writer, like, yo, why don't you just speak your truth of what's going on so you can really, you know, deliver it the way people want to hear it. So that's what, you know, started happening maybe even a year ago.
I feel like that's what we just went over with Salam.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Salam was talking about, he was talking about how Miguel, you know, asked him to leave the room at one point
because
he was going to do a song that was just so heartfelt. And it gets, you know, when you actually go from a spot that's real, genuine, and actually happened, the people are going to pick up on it so much better.
100%. Yeah. You know, and to go off of that, like, even Lotto came from the night before the record was actually made, because the record was made from another record. So I came to LA to work on a song called See You Later with the interns. I got to LA. And Cosign, shout out to Coast, put me in a room with his other producers while he had to finish some Big Sean stuff. So we're just trying to find chords, and he starts playing, the producer I was working with just literally starts playing doom doo doom doo doom, but by mistake. So I was like, oh, what was that? Doom doo doom doo doom 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 doom. So he started playing that over and over again. And the night before, I went to the club and I saw somebody that was dope as hell. You know what I mean? Mm. So, like, and I got her number. So it was just like, oh yeah, I got the baddest chick in the club.
Jackpot.
Jackpot. You know, I got the right 7 digits, you know? So it became that. And, you know, instantly I just started singing. I don't even know where it came from. But I just hit the lotto and that stuck. And then he was like, yo, let's talk about that. So it's from a real place, man. It's really from how, you know, the night before it actually had gone down. Mm-hmm. But it was a genuine mistake.
You still talk to her?
We cool. We cool. Yeah, we cool. We friends.
We all know what that means.
No, we cool. We
might have been a lot of you. Might have just got a scratchy. I just got a scratchy. Nah, that's dope, man.
Nah, we cool, though.
I mean, Chris does this segment of him, man. I think you would be absolutely perfect for now we joke and laugh about real life, where we actually have our audience hit us up about their real life problems and relationships.
Right.
And they look for advice. People need guidance out there, Timmy.
Uh-huh.
A lot of guidance.
We want to see if you can help them, man.
All right. So let's get right into it.
Okay.
My boss and I have been dating for 2 years now. Well, we haven't really been seeing each other for these last 2 months outside of work. Things have just gotten really weird between us, personally. Mm. What makes it even weirder is having to see him at work every day and taking orders from him. Mm. I'm not even sure that we'll work this out, but I'm not happy at work like I once was. My crazy ass should have been smarter, but what do I do now?
Mm.
Sleeping with the boss.
That's touchy.
Messy.
Yeah, a little messy. I think, you know, personally, in a situation like that, I try to get my mind off of that person by just, you know, keeping busy, trying to meet new people. But then also being professional, because that's your money, you know, so you don't want to mess up your money. So I guess you don't got to talk to him, but just you came in as his assistant, whatever. So do your job and you can text your girl at lunch, like, I can't stand this, man. We can keep it, but keep it separate as long as you work there, I think, honestly. Unless you feel like you should just quit and move if it's that bad, too, you know. But
right.
I don't think you should, you know, let the two lines draw anymore. Cause
would you mix the two?
Would I mix the two?
Work and play?
No, you can't do that.
No,
you can't do that. It's hard. It's hard. It gets too much. And there's too many people out there to even, you know, to entertain that.
I think.
When money's involved and, you know, and people's lives, no, you don't do that. It's not worth it.
I agree. I think it's a little messy. I mean, you come, like you said, you come in as whatever she is, the assistant or just employee. You come in as one person. You build a relationship once you start sleeping with the boss. And if that doesn't work out, then you're screwed. Because it's hard to go back to that first position.
Exactly.
There was nothing personal there in the beginning. Now there is, and that didn't work out. Now there's feelings involved. There's tension.
There's tension. And then when they say, can you go run and do that for me? They're like, oh, so you're just going to talk to me like that? You wasn't saying that. You know, all this in their mind. You know what I mean? It changes from, oh, this is my boss asking me to go run and do something. You know, so now I wouldn't even entertain that. It's too much.
Shorty, go dust off your resume.
I think
it's time for something new. Like,
I mean, what you think? You
can't go back after that. Like, first of all, like, look at the unemployment rate.
Yeah.
And look at the amount of men out there. You could have went to the club and
That's
got
what
a
I'm
man.
Saying. There's so many options.
Where you
going
to get another job at? Like, you know, you could have went to church and got a man, but where you going to get another job at?
It's hard.
Not with the boss. Like, there's nothing that's good. I mean,
unless y'all end up getting married.
That's a movie, though. That's like,
you gotta be sure.
That's like fairy tale.
That's like Richard Gere. That's like Pretty Woman or something like that. Like, that happens once every 100 of those relationships. Like, 99 of those relationships have to go wrong for the 100th one to go right. Don't be a statistic, man. Go dust up your resume.
Plus, if you're not happy at work, I think that's one of the worst feelings in life. Whether it be an actual job or, you know, as an actor, if you're on set and, like, you don't even get along with the director and he treats you like shit. I think if you're not happy in your, you know, setting of work, how can you actually work well?
Not
you
can't.
You know, you have to be happy in what you're doing. And if you screw up that relationship, now you're screwed for the rest of the time that you're at that job.
Exactly.
Don't be mad, girl. UPS is hiring.
Just hear Lotto.
Maybe she'll hit the Lotto.
Go back to the club, man. Just go back to the club.
All right, nah, that's a good one. You got another one? That was it?
Yeah, I mean, I got a few. I thought, you know, that one was the best one.
Let's
out
do
of
one
those.
More. Let's see if we got another one.
Yeah.
I like the way this guy thinks.
Sleeping with the boss. You, man. I knew that was going to be a tricky one, too.
Yeah, you don't even do that.
Yeah, and I feel bad. Can we get guys, you know, you could email us redlightspecialpc@gmail. Let's get some happy. Let's get some good ones. You know, like, I'm depressing the hell out of me. Week after week, you should read some of these ones that we get, man.
What was the craziest one so far that you heard?
Oh, man, what was the craziest one? What was the ones that we had with Rico?
Oh, no, he went in.
Because he gave us a good... He gave us a good personal story too.
Yeah, there was one about the chick that was the side piece, but then wanted to be the main chick, and we get a lot of those.
Oh yeah, yeah, that never happened.
Yeah. What Fab said, it take a lot to get from the backseat to the passenger.
Yeah, nah, you gotta get out the car. You get out the car.
All right, so it's I kind of wanted to go over one. Okay. All right. So this chick said, my friend and my boyfriend are really close and it makes me sort of uncomfortable. Does it make me seem jealous if I say something, or do I have the right to be mad? Certain things that they do just seem a little bit too much.
Is it a girl? The friend is a girl?
Yeah. It's a girl and her friend's a girl.
Should she be jealous?
So her girl and her boyfriend are super close and it makes her uncomfortable. Should she say something, or is that like, I guess it would make her
it's not going to make her a bitch. It's a legit question if she's feeling something. I mean, a woman's intuition is really dope. So if she's,
it is.
You know, so if a woman feels like something is not right, something may not be right. So it's worth a question. You know, it's worth a question to him.
I think it's worth a question. I think, what do you think, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, as a dude, like, your girlfriend stay far away from that, man. Yeah. Like, there's no good that could come from that.
It's
like,
not.
Or you, even if it's innocent, even if you had the best intentions, it's just all gonna get speculation. So why even start?
100%.
You know, from her, I would confront it and, you know, ask him, and, you know, or be like, yo, I just don't like the way y'all close. You know,
I don't think that's being a bitch at all.
Nah,
I always thought that was pretty shady, actually. Like, I don't see why, whether it be even family, I mean, even family, friends, whatever it is, I think if that's your significant other, there's no reason why another female should be that close. You know what I mean? Even like hanging out without you and stuff. There's a line. That's because regardless, you can't trust nobody. So, but if also with her, I mean, if she needs to put her man in check, like if.
But that's the thing. So you know what type of man you got? Trust your man. Like you say, you can't trust nobody. But if you can't trust your man, then maybe that's not the man that you.
That's true too.
I just think if he was trustable, he wouldn't be that close with that friend in the first place. You know what I mean? If he is, then he's already putting himself in a place of question.
Some dudes are oblivious though.
Yeah. I think you make a good impression with the friends. Whenever the friends are around, you make sure. When the friends are not around, you ask for them. You know, there's things you do, there's protocol you do as a good boyfriend. But to hang out one-on-one and all that, that's OD. You deserve to be asked questions because there's no need for that.
Or you
why can't she be there?
If she really want to take it next level, just hang out with his homie. That should have stopped real quick.
He's doing the Rico thing.
All his bullshit. Yeah, it's true. I learned that from Rico Love.
Rico Love was like, yo, just go on a date with a guy. Answer the phone when he calls you and be like, I'm on a date.
Ooh.
All the bullshit was
stopping.
He'll act right real quick. Hold on. Something's not right.
That's true, though. That's true.
But, you know, that's
he's so spiteful.
You don't have to play games. Man. I'm grown to be spiteful.
Would you do that? Would you hang out? Wait, if you're the friend and the boyfriend said, hey, let's grab some food, would that be bad?
Absolutely not. Oh, I don't do that.
Good.
There's even been times where, actually, my cousin used to, that was recently. My cousin threw that on me recently. She said, oh, go with him. You know, he's planning to go anyway. So just go and, you know, keep an eye on him. Even though it was like her plan for me to keep an eye, kind of. And it was like, I said no. I was like, nah, I'm not doing that. I just don't feel comfortable. I feel like I already know how people work. And then I've been in situations where I meet somebody and then I find out like they're in a situation and I'm like, you know, I'm done with that. So I don't even put myself in a situation where anything could happen with somebody who I'm not supposed to be, you know.
100%.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's, like you said, there's so many people in this world.
There's too many people.
You know, so I meet new options. People every day, so.
And there you have it.
Indeed. But some people just like the thrill of it.
Yeah.
That's the sick part of it. Like some people like the deal of it.
And we call those trifling.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with you. Something wrong with you.
I mean, I like a thrill, but that's like a different kind of thrill. That's trifling for real.
That's trifling, yeah.
Plus, it don't sit well with you after, like, you get found out. I know a lot of people
that do that. That have been in that situation?
Have been in that situation or similar ones. I mean, like, I'm always, like, the one of the group that has to, like, do the therapy. For my friends, so I be hearing
so you got the
stories they give me, and it's like that guilt trip is like it'll kill you, it'll eat you alive. You know, it's unhealthy.
And there goes the lesson, kids. Stay away from your girl's friends.
Yeah.
So are you working on any new music?
Yeah. So right now, actually, we're basically finishing up the EP. Like we were just talking about it out there, figuring out what feature we want to put on the next record. I got ballads and I got, you know, my parents are Nigerian, so I got a record that kind of feels that kind of islandy vibe, you know, accent driven type of vibe. So, and then the next one, I kind of want to stay in the club a little bit, just a bounce. So we're just still putting it together, but we have the direction of everything we want to do.
You know, you don't have a date yet. Or are you looking into like before summer ends or after summer?
Like fall.
Further.
Yeah, like around the fall. We was gonna let Lotto do his thing and then, you know, probably put out a video and then probably put out, you know, the next record. So yeah,
that's
cool.
Dope.
Cool little rollout.
Looking forward to
and
it.
And Power, which is honestly, I'm not just saying that because you're here, which is my favorite show.
Yeah, man.
I don't watch a lot of TV. Just because I feel like I don't have the time, but like when Walking Dead is on, I'm like on my zombie shit.
Is it dope? Everybody talks.
Well, it ended, didn't it?
It's done, right?
The season is done.
Oh,
I thought it was done for good. That's why they were doing like a spinoff show.
No, they're coming back.
Yeah.
They're doing a spinoff.
Crazy.
But I'm like a zombie. Like that's kind of my thing. So any zombie movies or whatever, I watch
thing.
Shit. Yeah,
nice, like a good zombie. Show.
And I'm from Brooklyn, so yeah. I'm not a zombie. I'm a zombie.
Yeah, get some points extra, back for that.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. And
Real
Power. My point was, fucking zombies and murderers from Queens is my shit. So I'm in the Power and I'm in the Walking Dead. I don't watch too many shows, but Power right now is my favorite show.
Oh man,
on TV. you know, I like the street element of it. But there's that. There's the love element of it. There's Ghost and Angela and what they're going through. And
I just think it's not cheesy. Like, there's so many shows out that are trying to portray that street lifestyle and the urbanness, and it's just cheesy. Like, it kind of seems like fake, or they don't get the right characters to play the roles, and it's like they're trying to give you something that you know it's not that way.
Mm-hmm.
And Power's like, just
the real.
Here's what it really is. Like, you know what I mean? And I feel like they got the perfect people playing. I mean, Tommy's like probably the perfect guy, you know, like on that show. And, you know, you play that crazy role. And I kind of want to see how it unfolds in the next few episodes, because I know there's more.
Oh, yeah.
There's more to it.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't.
Oh, it gets crazy.
What is it about Dre? Because I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dre has something to prove. I think Kanan puts people in a position where people want to live up to an expectation of him because of his reputation, whether it be his son Sean. Ghost is a reflection of Kanan because that's who he learned the street from. And then here we come and we see Dre, young, impressionable, ambitious, and ready to
do whatever. And, you know, that's why I shout out to Courtney, because, you know, when we sat down, when I had just booked it, she explained to me exactly what she wants from Dre. And she wants it to kind of be the story of a young Ghost in a way. You know what I mean? Whether not the same storyline of the who knows what's going to happen, but those the elements of Ghost, even the way he starts off where he's, you know, learning from him. Like, at this point, I owe him a debt. He saved my life, you know, in prison. So, forever loyal, but at the same time, Dre starts seeing that there's a lot of money that could be made in this situation, because he's a hustler at the same time. And he's starting to see, one, at this point where we are, he's starting to kind of see how crazy Kanan really is, you know, but he's also saying, okay, well, my loyalty is to this situation. But ultimately, Dre is the product of Kanan and more like a young Ghost, and the same vibe, same mindset, and to see where he goes. His by the end of season two, his loyalty gets tested in so many different ways, because now he meets everybody, you know. He ends up meeting everybody, and then at that point he has to make a decision on what's next, you know. You know, even do I make it to the end of the season, who knows? But like, it's just he has to decide what's going on.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And already within you took that trip to Miami.
Yeah, we took that.
And
yeah.
This episode already passed, so there's no spoilers. And killed off maybe my favorite character on the show. Like, she was an assassin. She didn't even have a name. Her name was just Pink Sneakers.
It's hard. Yo, she's dope, man.
She's really dope.
Yeah, her energy's really like that, though.
Right.
Shout out to Leslie Lopez, man. She's really, like, engaging. She demands your attention. And she, ultimate professional, man. You know, usually, I've never been in a situation where I had to kill somebody that was a main character in the show. I never had to kill somebody who was a main character in the show, or, you know, substantial, you know, part of it. And usually you would think, you know, I've heard stories, you know, working on even Boss, that, like, people wouldn't show up. They'd be like, man, F this, and da-da-da-da, like, and
before just
real
angry.
Yeah, like, just real
angry. It's like
angry.
Getting fired from a
It's
child.
Like, you're getting fired. It really is, you know what I mean? And, like, she handled it like a G. Like, you know, she was like, you know, I respect the writing, you know. And when we had such a good time in Miami, we all went to party and stuff. It was a good energy around it. It wasn't bitter at all. It wasn't spiteful. It was just like, yo, this, you know, let's make it happen. Let's make it look good. Let me go out with a bang. So, shout out to her, because that was hard. You know, that must have been really hard to, you know, to say bye to her at the end of it, and, you know, she's not on the show anymore.
To know that that's it.
That's it. You know, that's the last scene. So I was like, yo, make this the dopest, you know, part of your reel. You know, make this moment the dopest part of your reel. So that's, you know, maximize it.
I don't know, man. But if y'all combine with The Walking Dead, she turned into a zombie. She can come back.
Come on,
y'all be all right. Courtney, holla at me. I got the whole thing popping right now, okay? man. Yo, man, Rotimi, man. I just wanted to thank you, man, for coming up, man. And sharing your story and your work with us. I have a feeling this isn't going to be the last visit as we get up for the EP. Please come back.
Oh, of course. Of course, this is dope, man. And shout out to you guys for having me. It's been a fun time. You don't get the real. You know, this is my first real, like, you know, interview where, you know, you can say whatever you want, and it's just a conversation. I like it.
Remember that when the platinum plaque start coming in. We need you to come back. You know, yo, we was the first real interview. Why are you not coming back?
No, but definitely once the EP comes out, you know, come back, talk about it. You know, we always like to do something where we get all of our followers to kind of engage in conversation. So they'll tell us what they think about the project, you know, what they like and don't like, their favorite records off of it.
Perfect.
And, you know, again, this is just something that we want everybody to feel comfortable coming up and talking about, you know.
Perfect.
We want you to come here, just positive energy, you know, speak about you. Like Rob always says, it's not about the drama. It's not about, you know, what the media is putting out. It's just about the music.
I'm all about the music. All about the music, and that's the most important part of it. You know, without that, I wouldn't be sitting here. You know, so you got to make sure that's, you know, the dopest part about it. So I agree. But yo, y'all should come to my show July 14th.
I'm
headlining SOB's Music Matters.
BET
Music
Matters.
I'm right there.
July 14th. I think it's a free show too, right? So it's just
free or not, we're there.
Right there.
Love.
I'd have paid for it, but nah, that was free. Listen,
love.
Listen, you don't know about me. Listen, I go out there. I still buy albums. I buy concert tickets.
That's hard, bro.
Nah, it's important.
With the VIP tickets.
Hey.
VIP is like,
nah, it is.
I need to be in like,
in the mix.
I want to see the show.
You know what I'm saying?
But man, where can we find you on Twitter, Instagram, man? Shout it out, man.
Oh yeah, yeah. Instagram Rotimi Music, Rotimi Music. And Twitter, Rotimi, Rotimi. I try to respond back to everybody. Facebook, you know, /Rotimi1. And my website, rotimimusic.com. You can keep on board with everything there. And yeah, make it happen. Lotto's on iTunes.
Yeah, okay, most importantly, Lotto is on iTunes.
Yeah.
Chris, where can they find you?
At Chris Lova on everything, KRISLOVAA.
We'll
that's
do
what
it right
is.
Now.
Yep, and I'm at Rob Markman, Robmarkman on Twitter, Instagram. You can catch me on MTV News. That's where I do most of my work at. And yo, I just wanted to send a quick shout out to the people over at thisisrnb.com.
Oh yeah,
For always holding us down.
Oh man,
yeah.
They did Essence Fest just recently. And they put up a lot of exposure on that. I caught up with a lot of the performances with them. But they always show so much love.
Yeah, they're dope. They're dope. This R&B. Singers Room is dope, too.
Singers Room is also
shout
dope.
Shout out to them, too.
Yeah, for real, man. Because, you know, we got to uphold this thing, man. There ain't too many spots where we could just talk and celebrate about the music. So, Singers Room, what's up? This is R&B. Jamie, what's up, man? And until next week.
Yes, sir. I'm about to stalk your Instagram and like everything right now.
What
yes,
are you talking
indeed.
About? Me?
Of course you were.
Who are you talking to?
He wasn't talking about me.
I just wanted to make that clear for a second.
It was clear from the get-go.
Because he was looking down at the phone, so I'm like, hold up.
You ain't got to worry about me.
At all.
But,
and shout out Jake and Papa, too, with the Starless.
Yeah, Jake and Papa, man, is going to take us out with Starless, man. Let's go. Till next week, Red Light Special. Peace.
And that's the motherfucking truth.